Well, we started off the top of the show with Sean David Morton, and we're going to wrap it up with a gentleman who they actually know each other rather well. And to be sure, a controversial character by any standard. David Icke, good morning.
Hello, Rick, how are you doing?
I'm all right, thanks.
I didn't catch there. There was a click on the line. I didn't catch who the other person was, but I know.
Sean David Morton.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah, vaguely, yeah.
Vaguely?
Well, yeah.
He's interviewed about you a couple of times.
That's right, a few years ago now.
Yeah, and he's a big fan of yours, by the way.
Oh, yeah, he's anyone that gets stuff out that doesn't normally get out, as my respect.
Well, he does get around, and he's, in fact, he usually shows up at all these conferences. Now, he's not going to be at the one in Shasta. You're going to be at Mount Shasta.
But yeah, that's just me.
Yeah. He's not going to be there, but you're going to be there. Tell me, you talk quite a bit about, among other things, the characters who really rules the world. But we'll talk about that momentarily. But also, some of the prophecies, among other things, the temple or the Pillar of Enoch, sacred geometry, the Great Pyramid, Alpha Draconians versus Pleiadians, etc. These are areas that you know something about?
Well, kind of, yeah. I started on a journey. I was a journalist, often doing the kind of thing that you do, mm-hmm. In radio and television. And I had an experience in the early 90s particularly, which blew my head off. And I started to see the world in a different way. And I started on a journey. And basically, what happened is that I realized, even though I'd been a journalist in newspapers and radio and television, that there were great areas of information available, not least about the nature of reality and what have you, that I'd never come across. And it made so much sense to me that I asked the question, why have I not seen this before? Why isn't this part of the curriculum? Why isn't it more mainstream in terms of it being discussed and debated? And that started asking me asking questions, who's stopping it? And putting one step in front of another, it opened up over the last 15 years the most extraordinary tapestry, network, web of manipulated, coordinated deceit, which makes seeing the future a lot easier when you know what the agenda plan for the future is. This is why a lot of more people are turning to my stuff, because in books I wrote in the mid-90s and since, I said this is what the agenda is, and it's now unfolding before our eyes by the day. I mean, it's extraordinary in the way that world events, current events, are mirroring the agenda that I uncovered, and not just me, but many other people.
Give us an example of what you mean. I mean, this agenda, and who are the main players right now?
Well, if you see them in the public eye, even at the level of the Bushes and the Blairs, they're still gophers. They're still puppets on strings. The real people that are manipulating world events you never see. They don't put themselves on public display. Quite simply, there is a network of families that work through a secret society network, and they make sure that their people are in the key positions of power to introduce changes in society that lead the people and the world into the structure of government and control that they are working towards. And it's very simple, a very simple equation. If there's a few of you, and in awareness of what they're doing, it is a few compared with the global population. If you want to control literally billions, then you can only do that by centralizing decision-making in every area of our lives, because it's like being on a stage, keeping spinning plates running on sticks. The more plates you have, the less control you're going to have over events. What you want, ideally, is one big plate and one big stick, because you can control that from a central point. So what they're looking towards, and we're seeing it moving increasingly rapidly, is a world government that would make all the major decisions in the world, operating through a world army, a world central bank, a world currency, which wouldn't be cash in the end. It would only be electronic money, for which there are fundamental implications for freedom, and also a microchipped population linked to a global computer. And now, when I started talking about this 15 years ago, people were going, you know, like, what are you on? But this agenda is unfolding before our eyes all the time. And the war on terrorism, 9/11, and all this stuff are all connected into this process of centralizing power, increasing surveillance and control, so that the population can be controlled from a central point. And the key technique which is used to bring this agenda about is one that I've dubbed problem reaction solution. It's devastatingly simple and devastatingly effective. You want to change society, i.e. centralized power and increased surveillance and control. And you know that if you openly offered that, we've had a discussion and this is what we've decided to do, you know you'd get terrific opposition to what you propose. So what you do is you play problem reaction solution, which works like this. Stage one, you covertly create a problem. It could be a 9/11, it could be a terrorist event of some kind, it could be a government collapse, a run on the currency, a stock market collapse. You tell the people through an overwhelmingly unquestioning mainstream media what you want the people to believe about that event, i.e. who did it and why and how. You're looking at stage two for a reaction from the people that is of outrage, that is of fear, that is words to the effect of, something must be done. This can't go on. What are you going to do about it?
No.
And then at stage three, you offer the solutions to the problems you have created, which are changes in society, changes in legislation, which advance your agenda for centralization of power and more control and surveillance of the people. And this problem reaction solution is being played on us all the time at different levels. It's all over the world, not just in America. And it's devastatingly effective, not least because the mainstream media, which could bring problem reaction solution down overnight by questioning and investigating the official version of events, do not overwhelmingly do that. I mean, I had a book out, Tales from the Time Loop, 2 years ago, immediately after the invasion of Iraq, which laid out in great detail how the whole thing was manipulated, how there were no weapons of mass destruction, and how many years this whole scam went back in terms of its planning. And now we're having Downing Street memos and other official sources being leaked, which are pushing the time this thing was agreed further and further back. I think they've got a year back now. I think the latest one might be 18 months, but it's years that this thing was in the planning. And what was that? That shows that you don't even need a real problem, Rick, to play problem reaction solution on the people. You just need the people to have the perception that there's a problem. Oh, my God, Saddam Hussein's got all these weapons of mass destruction. He's going to unleash them on us.
Yeah.
So it's a mind game. The few can't manipulate the many physically. There's just too many people. They do it by manipulating the way that people see the world and therefore see the proposals and changes that are being put forward to them.
Yeah, and of course we all know that the media is more than willing to go along. I'd like to think that they don't. I know in Britain your press tends to be a bit more confrontational.
Well, I think the thing is, Rick, that these Downing Street memos are a classic example because they were very big over here, obviously. They were revealed during the Blair election campaign when he incidentally got total power to rule this country for another 5 years, having got just 35% of the people to vote for him. It's called democracy, apparently. But during that campaign, it all came out. And you know, you can look on the internet at all the questioning that's going on about why the American media ignored these memos, which fundamentally showed that Bush had lied to the American people for ages and ages. And it's only now that the people in America are getting some idea that they even exist.
Well, of course, in America, you know that our population tends not to want to believe anything that anybody who disagrees with the agenda, as you say, they disregard us out of hand.
Well, you know, I've said many times, you can put your head in the sand for as long as you like, trying to ignore the fact that a tornado is coming, but it's still coming. And if you lift your head and have a look, what's coming, then you might be able to sidestep it and not be damaged by it. But if you sit there with your head in the sand, sure as heck, the tornado's going to come, and it's going to be too late by the time you go, oh, my goodness me, what's that noise? And one of the points I would make very strongly in terms of the effect of all this on America is that America, I feel for America in so many ways, because it's being manipulated to destroy itself. This network of interbreeding families working through this secret society web, it has no allegiance to America. It has no allegiance to any country. It has an allegiance to its centralized control agenda. And if you are going to have a world government with total power, the last thing you can have is a superpower. The superpower must be destroyed for the world government to have its total power. And what's being done through the Bush administration and these neocons is America is being manipulated to destroy itself militarily and in terms of the economy, so that it comes under the heel, eventually, of this world government. That's the whole point. Use America to destroy America.
Rather successfully, unfortunately.
At the moment, certainly is.
Yeah, yeah. When we come back, we'll talk about the nature of these societies and their how old and how far back. You know, I think we regard them as being the ruling classes, whoever they may be.
It goes back a long way, Rick, yeah.
All right, we'll do just that. David Icke with us as we continue, and we'll talk some more about that. And also his latest piece of work called Infinite Love is the Only Truth. But also The Biggest Secret, and also called Freedom Road, Turning the Tide, Revelations of a Mother Goddess, and The Reptilian Agenda, which, by the way, Sean Morton talked about early on in the front part of the show. 303-713-8585, the number, as we continue on News Radio 850, KOA. 8585 is our number, as we continue on, of course. And we are talking with David Icke. Who, by the way, you're on the Isle of Wight.
The Isle of Wight, yeah, a little island just off Portsmouth.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, we had all the naval ships just in front of here over the last few days. They've been celebrating 200 years of the Battle of Trafalgar and various things. So it's all been...
Well, didn't that happen down by the Pillars of Hercules somewhere down in that part of the world, did it not?
Yeah, they just had we've got this stretch of water called the Solent between the mainland and the Isle of Wight. It's about 4 miles wide, and that's where they chose to have the celebration with the Queen and all the rest of it. Not my cup of tea, I must say, but it's been a lot of people from all over the world down here in the last few days.
Yeah, as I understand, although they won the battle, Nelson got whacked.
I'm afraid so.
Oh, well, there it is.
There's this famous line, what was it, he's supposed to have said to his assistant, kiss me, Hardy. But he actually said, apparently, kismet, which means fate, Hardy.
Yeah, well, of course, he got zapped good and proper. He got shot by a sniper, I think, or something.
Something like that.
Yeah,
but, I mean, you know, when you look, you know, given what we're talking about, Rick, when you look through history, and again, you know, it's just a history of conflict and human beings killing each other, you know.
Well, you know, and you have a book called The Reptilian Agenda.
Yeah. Well, now, that's a video, yeah. I have one called Children of the Matrix, which is all about this subject.
All right. Now, does this somehow link with this ruling class that we're talking about, this group, this inner circle?
Well, the thing is that when I started on this journey, I did it with an open mind. If you're trying to uncover what's happening in the world and you have a belief system to defend, whether it's religious, political, or scientific, then you might as well not bother. Because when you go into this with an open mind, you get taken into areas that you weren't expecting. And belief systems, I'm afraid, have to be removed at the door. Otherwise, you know, you're not going to see what's going on. And what happened was, as I went through the 90s, and I've traveled to more than 40 countries researching this, I started coming across this recurring theme all over the world from people of every walk of life you can imagine, people in the banking industry, businesswomen, all types of people you can imagine, and they were telling me the same thing, and that is, and many of them had worked on the inside of this secret society network at various levels, and they told me how they had seen people, apparently human, change into a reptilian type form and then change back again. Sometimes it was really fast, sometimes a little bit slower, sometimes just the eyes change, sometimes just part of the body, sometimes the whole body. And what I started doing was, of course, you hear one or two of these things, Rick, and you go, crikey, you know, what have I got into here? But then when you hear 20, 30, 50, 100, 200, then you start to say, there's something to look at here. And when you then look at the ancient accounts, again, all over the world, going back hundreds, thousands of years, you find the same recurring theme of this so-called shape-shifting phenomenon where people have moved between a human and reptilian form. In fact, I was speaking in South Africa after the first book on this subject came out, one called The Biggest Secret, and I got a call from the official historian of the Zulu nation, a man called Credo Mutwa, asking to meet me. And when I met him, he said, I've read your book. He said, how do you know this? He said, this is ancient African knowledge. And he told me the story of what they call in their knowledge stream, again, going way back thousands of years, the Chitahuri, which translates as the children of the serpent or the children of the python. And they have this, again, same theme of this shape-shifting race between human and reptilian form. And again, you know, one of the difficult things, Rick, in getting this across is that because so much knowledge has been suppressed and is not allowed into the public arena, you have to go looking for it. People are constantly making decisions on what they believe is possible based on a fraction of the information available on what is possible. Give you a quick example. A few centuries ago, when people first said the Earth was round, they were ridiculed and dismissed because people said, that's ludicrous. If the Earth was round, the people on the bottom would fall off. Don't be silly. But once you introduce the law of gravity, suddenly what seemed ridiculous sounds a lot less so. And the nature of reality, when you think about shape-shifting, if you think about shape-shifting between a solid human form and a solid other form, then that's ridiculous. It's just not possible. But then you start understanding what the nature of reality is. And again, as I've researched this, it's extraordinary how mainstream science and the cutting edge of quantum physics has actually already established that this reality that we think is solid is actually an illusion. The only place that this reality of solid walls and trees and what have you exists is actually in our brains. What's happening is that we are decoding frequency fields and electrical signals into a holographic, apparently three-dimensional world, but it only exists in our heads. There's that great line in the Matrix movie where the Morpheus character says, well, what is real? If you're talking about what we touch, hear, taste, smell, and see, then real is only electrical signals interpreted by our brain, and that is absolute scientific fact. We're living in the equivalent of a holographic version of the internet. If you look at the internet or even television, the only place the internet exists in the form that we perceive the internet is actually on the computer screen. Same with television. It's on the television screen. Everywhere else in the system of the internet or television, those pictures are actually electrical signals and mathematical codes. And so I'm looking here at, apparently in my room here, apparently four solid walls and a solid table, but they're made up of atoms, and atoms are basically empty. There's nothing in an atom. As one writer said, if you take the inside of an atom to be the size of a cathedral, then the particles within it are about the size of a 10-cent piece. The rest is, to our reality, empty space. How can that make up a solid world? As quantum physics has pointed out, it's not possible. It has to be an illusion. It has to be a creation of our minds. So once you start realizing that the nature of reality is much more fluid and non-physical than we perceive, then shape-shifting, moving between one form and another, becomes a lot less staggeringly bizarre than it is if we actually live in a solid world. And this shape-shifting between human form and another form, the form that keeps coming up again and again is of a reptilian-type form. And when I talk to people who've worked on the inside and got caught in the web and didn't want to, they confirm, yeah, these guys ain't actually human as we perceive human. See, another part of our reality that we don't realize because no one tells us is that what we see with our eyes, apparently, is a infinitesimal fraction of what actually exists in the space that we are apparently looking at. It's like we are a radio station, and if people are tuned to this radio station now, that's what they get. They don't get all the other radio stations that exist in the same space as the broadcast frequency of this radio station does. They only get this one because that's what their radio is tuned to. They move the dial, now they get another station, but your station didn't cease to exist the moment they moved to another station on the dial. It's still broadcasting, it's just that they're not perceiving it anymore. And our five senses and our eyes are perceiving a tiny, tiny fraction of what actually exists. Even if you go by mainstream science, the electromagnetic spectrum is only 0.005% of what science has established and predicted exists in this universe. And human sight, what they call visible light, is a fraction of that 0.005%. As one writer said, humans are basically blind. So when you look at the incredible diversity of form in human and in animal terms in this tiny, tiny fraction that we can perceive, imagine the diversity of form that exists in the infinity beyond it. And it's just outside the frequency range of human sight that these entities that are manipulating through these family bloodlines, that they appear to operate. So sometimes they'll come in to this frequency range and we'll go, hey, did you see that? And then they'll go out again, and people, it's like UFOs, people go, honestly, mate, I saw this UFO, and it just disappeared in front of the eyes. Well, it didn't. It moved to a frequency range that your eyes can no longer access, and at that point, just as a radio station disappears when you move the dial to another, so the UFO disappears from human sight. So the point I'm emphasizing here, Rick, is that there is so much more to know, and indeed the information is available, but it doesn't get into the mainstream arena where 99% of people get 99.9% of their information. And therefore, humans are making decisions on what's possible and what's incredible and what's bizarre and what's ludicrous and all the rest of it based on no information, basically, on what the scale of possibility is.
All right, hold the thought for a second. We're going to continue on. Fascinating stuff, David. Well presented, I may add. It actually makes sense. How odd. 303-713-8585, the number, as we continue with my guest, David Icke. And, by the way, there's a wonderful film out there, if you've seen, called What the Bleep Do You Know? Have you heard this one, David?
I saw it. I was invited to the premiere in London. And, again, it's fantastic that this stuff is getting out so that people can see the tiny fraction of information that actually, not just through the mainstream media, but through the education system, is getting through to us.
All right, hold on. We'll continue on momentarily. 303-713-8585, the number, and the lines are wide open. And I promise we'll try to get to your callers as quickly as possible on News Radio 850 KOA. Going to be, by the way, showing up at Mount Shasta Conference July the 24th. Is that right, David?
It's Saturday the 23rd, I think.
All right.
And I'll be speaking for 7 hours.
Oh, my.
Hundreds of illustrations. And not all at once, by the way.
No, certainly not.
I'll have a cup of tea at some point.
Yeah.
No, but what it is that when you're dealing with a whole different version of the world, unless you go from A to B to C to D, then the dots are not connected. And it's connecting the dots that is what I'm trying to do, because there's so many things all over the place. that if they're not connected, you can't see the picture. But when they are connected, you realize that apparently totally unconnected things like quantum physics and the banking scam and the war on terror and all these things actually do connect into a very coherent whole.
Before we go to the telephone, I have one question I must ask. The reptilian, whoever or whatever they are, who are they?
Well, people talk about extraterrestrials, and I'm not for a moment saying extraterrestrials of the conventional type don't exist, but where I'm coming from is more described as interdimensionals. There are entities that have the ability, because they have the knowledge, to move between different frequencies, different realities. And this reality, which, again, is just a frequency range, is being manipulated from just outside of that frequency range, and it's being done through these families. And the exact background of this reptilian group, whatever you want to call it, of course, you know, the jury's still out. We're still researching. We're still trying to find out. But certainly the common themes all over the world tell a story of this world, this reality being manipulated by this reptilian race, these reptilian entities, and they have an agenda for centralized global control, and they're doing it through these ruling families by centralizing power in the world and taking control of everything that we need to survive. You know, it's a simple equation. You know, when I've been to Africa many times, I know Africa's very much, you know, in the news at the moment with the G8 conference and the Bob Geldof Live 8 and all the rest of it. But the idea that Africa cannot feed itself is insane. That continent could feed the world. The reason it doesn't is overwhelmingly two things. One, the transnational corporations based in America and Europe have taken over vast tracts of food-growing land to grow cash crops for the Western market, and taking away land that the local population at one time used to use to grow its own food locally. And the other thing that's the cause behind it is vast tracts of food-growing land, again, are no-go areas in Africa because of manipulated wars and conflicts. And it's, again, a simple equation. You know, there is abundance in this world, so why is there so much poverty, so much hunger, so many people without? The equation is this. Abundance equals choice equals freedom. Scarcity equals dependency equals control. And so what we have, because of the way the system's been structured, is manufactured scarcity to lead to manufactured dependency, leading to manufactured control. And the whole system is to keep vast numbers of people in this dependency, because then they're in control.
All right, let's go to the telephone. And although we have only a few minutes left, in Lakewood, is it George?
Good morning, Rick.
Hi, you're on with my guest, David Icke.
And Mr. Icke.
Hello, George.
Dr. Icke.
Hello.
Okay.
Hello. Well, I left school at 15 to learn on my terms, not on the system's terms. So I got no doctorates or any of that stuff.
Well, that's great. That's great. Well, I'm really fascinated by this subject, and I'm really glad you're talking about it. And I know that Alex Jones has talked a lot about it. And
yeah, Alex does a really good job down in Texas getting this stuff out.
Yeah.
Right. And actually, readers could download a good source called George Bush, the Unauthorized Biography. And you can get that.
George Bush. Very, very good book.
Exactly, by Tarpley and Chatkin.
Yeah. I read it, it must be 10 years ago or more now. It's a very, very good book, and mind-blowing for people that don't know the real Father George.
Exactly, and this thing goes way back to before we were even a nation, started by the Rothschilds with their international banking scheme, and they founded the Skull and Bones Society out of Yale University. And all the Bushes have belonged to that secret order, as well as other politicians and world leaders, like you've talked about. And they've got different factions of it all over the world.
Actually, a very good point you're making, George, in relation to what I was talking to Rick about earlier, in the sense that this network places its people in positions of power. The Skull and Bone Society at Yale University, I've been there a couple of times to have a look at it from the outside, of course. They are based in a windowless building that they call the Tomb, very appropriately. And in there they go through very bizarre rituals, which include lying in a coffin and all this stuff. And the present president will have been through that. His father will have been through that. Everyone who's become an initiate of the Skull and Bone Society has been through that. Now, at any point, the last time I was reading figures on this, they reckon there's about 800 people out in society that are members of this group. Certainly, it's not many, even if it's more than that. There's apparently about 280, 290 million Americans in a country where apparently anyone can become president, and yet at the last election, somehow, sits back in amazement just by coincidence, both candidates, George Bush and John Kerry, both came from the Skull and Bone Society.
Yeah.
And I saw them both interviewed on PBS, and the interviewer asked them about the Skull and Bone Society, and the president actually said, that's too secret to talk about, and the interviewer then changed the subject.
All right, I have to take a break right here, fellas. Hold on. And, George, thanks so much. David, hold on, please. We're going to take a commercial break. We'll continue right in a moment. 448-303-713-8585, the number. I'm Rick Barber, and you're listening to News Radio 850 KOA.
Oh, wow. Hey, Rick, and hey, David. David, masterful job on your description of how the power elites keep their agendas hidden through problem reaction solution, which is also known as the Hegelian dialect.
Yes, it is.
But it seems to me like here in the States, the main power brokers are an organization called the Council on Foreign Relations, which was spun off of the Royal Institute of International Affairs, which were the CFR started back in about 1920, and the way they seem to me, from my studies, to be bringing about the demise of America, because they have their people put in the top positions of all stratas of American society, everything from the military to education to especially the Congress and the State Department and, you know, business and all that stuff. I mean, you know, all you have to do is get a membership list and then look and see where their members are placed. And they're all top leaders in all different areas of this country.
You're absolutely right. In a book called And the Truth Shall Set You Free, I go into this whole network you're talking about in great detail. One of the things to emphasize is that America is actually controlled from Europe, not by, you know, Tony Blair's government or Chancellor Schroeder or someone who is politically in the public eye, but the center of the global secret society network, which these people control and manipulate through, is actually in Europe. And so it's no accident that you have the Royal Institute of International Affairs, which is a Rothschild-controlled organization in London,
right,
actually founding the CFR and the Trilateral Commission. And you're absolutely right. You know, you look at the people in power in America, they're members of these organizations, one after the other. It's the coordinating force for the agenda.
All right, with that, I must take it right to the top. David, you'll be at Mount Shasta Conference the 23rd?
23rd on the Saturday, yes, about 2 weeks, I think. And anyone wants my books, davidicke.com, where they'll also get a daily news service, which gives you the news the mainstream's not telling you.
All right, and by the way, it's spelled I-C-K-E. David, thanks so much indeed, and fascinating stuff to be sure. Thank you.
It's a pleasure, Rick. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And with that, news is coming up. I'll catch you back on Monday night on News Radio 850.